Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ryan Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest says America is losing the war on drugs, partly because drugs are incredibly effective, and beating addiction starts with understanding the sheer power of drugs to soothe pain and ease anxieties and make us feel better. You may know Dr. Lloyd Sederer from his dozen books or as mental health editor for the Huffington Post. He is also the chief medical officer for the New York State Office on Mental Health and an adjunct professor at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. And he is the author now of The Addiction Solution, Treating Our Dependence on Opioids and Other Drugs. Dr. Sederer, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be here, Brian.
Would it be fair to say you start the book by normalizing the place drugs have in society?
Drugs are ubiquitous. There's not a society on earth any longer that doesn't use intoxicants. Some people think that that's evidence that it's a basic instinct like hunger or sex.
What makes someone more or less vulnerable to drug addiction?
That's a great question. Actually, quite a number of things. One is their biology. A second is their early upbringing or trauma along the way. Another is their social circumstances, their disadvantages that leave them prone to seek some solutions to the misery that is their life.
Is there science about trauma? People, I think, are much more aware these days than in generations past about the traumas they experience and more conscious about ways to deal with them. The last time you were on the show, I believe it was for a book you wrote about trauma. Is there science that shows that early trauma or adult trauma leaves people more vulnerable to drug addiction?
Unquestionably, and we now call that adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. And these are any number of major stressors that a young child, 3, 4, 5, may experience, like domestic violence, sexual abuse, a parent in jail, active drug addiction in the home. These all put these children at very high risk by the time they're teenagers for addiction and other problems.
So what's the core problem, in your view, with our current approach to treating or preventing drug addiction?
We're still trying to control people's access to drugs, and it's never worked. Probably the most illustrious example is prohibition. Surely that didn't work, and it left us with, it put the mafia, organized crime on steroids. This has never worked, and we persist in trying to punish or police our way out of addiction.
So should I assume that you're for the legalization of recreational marijuana?
New York State has just issued a major report on this, weighing the pros and cons, and the pros exceed the cons, though there are things to be careful about with any introduction of a major drug.
Is there good science on the balance between, say, recreational marijuana as a gateway drug toward opioids or other more dangerous, inherently more dangerous drugs? Or, as some marijuana legalization advocates argue, could it even be preventive against as widespread use of opioids, because then people would have something that was legal and available that they were getting a high on?
There's no evidence that marijuana is a gateway drug. There's talk about it, but there's no hard evidence to that effect. And states that have legalized recreational marijuana have seen decreases in opioid overdose deaths.
Decreases, and
in the prescription of opioids.
Listeners, any phone calls for Dr. Lloyd Sederer, author now of The Addiction Solution, The Addiction Solution, let's say it right, Treating Our Dependence on Opioids and Other Drugs, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Along that same thread, I don't know if you've seen this, but even much more extreme than legalizing marijuana is a news story today that Mexico, with its massive drug cartel violence problem, might legalize or decriminalize all drugs, including opioids. This is not a policy there, but this is something that apparently they're going to actively discuss under the new president. Do you think that would help public health ramifications for Mexicans or for people in the United States, one way or the other?
I don't know how that would play itself out, but they're not the only country. Portugal is a very good example of a complete decriminalization of drugs. And it's worked for that country, and other countries have looked to them to as potential models, and I gather that may be the case with Mexico.
Opioids are totally legal in Portugal?
Decriminalization is different from legalization.
Right.
And Portugal has decriminalized all drugs. And certain drugs can be obtained with prescriptions in a variety of countries, like heroin, for example, in Switzerland. This is what we call harm reduction. It's a way of keeping people alive while they're using and until they get into recovery.
Do you think harm reduction, which used to really be seen as alternative, is just mainstream now? You know, that the knee-jerk reaction of having the state or people in medicine do anything to facilitate the use of addictive drugs, people used to recoil against that, I think, much more than they do, and now are starting to more in the general population get the idea of harm reduction, even if that means giving clean needles to addicts or setting up safe injection sites, as Mayor de Blasio is now proposing for New York. Is this mainstream now?
It's better accepted, but it is far from mainstream. So much stigma still applies to people using drugs, and particularly drugs like opioids, that we're not yet, as a society, accepting.
Where are you on medical treatments, I should say drug treatments, drug interventions against opioid addiction? We had a guest a couple of months ago who's an MD who says, look, you know, some of these medications, you don't want to prescribe people drugs to get them off drugs, but hey, this is what really works. Where are you on that?
I completely agree with your former guest. The best evidence for people being able to stay off opioids and stay alive is what's called medication-assisted treatment, including buprenorphine, Suboxone, and methadone.
What about LSD? I don't know that that's being used to treat opioid addiction, but I think you bring it up in the book, right?
What's more promising is psilocybin, magic mushrooms, which have been studied in four very august medical centers for people with terminal illness and are now being explored for addiction, severe depression, OCD. There is something transformative, not only spiritually, psychologically from the trip, but there are brain changes that occur from one trip.
What's the difference between psilocybin mushrooms and LSD in that respect? I think the generation of people who tripped in the 60s, often used both, and they were seen as the same kind of psychedelic high.
Well, they're very similar. They both have effect on serotonin in the brain, but you can think of psilocybin as a gentler trip than LSD.
Shaley in Old Bridge, New Jersey. You're on WNYC with Dr. Lloyd Setterer. Hi, Shaley.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you for calling.
No problem.
So what's your question?
Hi. So I'm a pharmacy student at Rutgers University, and there's a lot of talk about it's not a new drug, but naloxone, and making naloxone more of a presence in our society. Do you think it would be beneficial or harmful to have naloxone as more of a ubiquitous drug and have a lot more access to it? Do you think it would, you know, enable people, or do you think it would make more of a beneficial impact on society?
That's a fiction, that it enables people to use opioids. Nobody uses opioids because they think someone's handy with a dose of naloxone, an antidote. People use drugs because they are in pain or they want to run away from their lives, not because there's naloxone handy.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Steve in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello, Steve.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to bring up the idea of just the simple research of cannabinoid products, which has been suppressed and blocked left and right for years and years now. My mom was a cancer survivor, and she unfortunately passed away due to complications with a gastroenterological, I can't even say the word. She went in for a colonoscopy, and there was complications, and she unfortunately passed away. But she was on so many different prescription drugs that her system was already thrashed. She was completely, you know, did not have a good quality of life. I firmly believe that if there had been more research into the benefits of cannabis and the different types of medications that may be able to come about, she might have been able to get something that would give her a better quality of life. But research has been blocked for so many years, and there isn't even a way to find out what's possible at this point. I just wanted to discuss that. I can take my answer off the air. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your question.
Yes. We have too little research about cannabis because it's what's called a Schedule I drug on the federal level, and so it's been very hard to research it. However, as states legalize both medical and recreational marijuana, they're going to study what doses, what composition, mixture of THC, which gets us high, and CBD works best for which patients when. We're going to see more evidence, but we don't have a whole lot yet.
My guest is Dr. Lloyd Sederer, author of The Addiction Solution, Treating Our Dependence on Opioids and Other Drugs, and Anne-Marie in Sussex County around WNYC. Hello, Anne-Marie.
Hi. First, I'd like to start with the positives, and I completely agree on your stance as far as medication-assisted treatment, helping people with opioid use disorder and harm reduction. These are all great ways to help people. I just have to say, as far as legalization, all legalization of drugs, which it sounds like you are promoting, is an open door to the commercialization of another addictive industries. We've already fought the tobacco industry. We're fighting the alcohol industry, the way they target youth and get users at a young age to accept and normalize the use of addictive drugs as a way to have a good time, be fit in. If we do that with all drugs, I just cannot see that that's going to be the answer to addiction. And it's across the board what's made horrible, an environment and society that normalizes. Get to the table all together, smarter policies, not move so fast with the legalization of another drug that is addictive. I've never talked to one opioid user who didn't start with marijuana. So I don't like the word gateway, but certainly it's a stepping stone to other drugs.
Dr. Sederer.
I am not advocating for a blanket legalization of all drugs. Think about legalizing synthetic marijuana, for example, which is poison, or crack, or carfentanil, which is deadly with a tiny bit of, with one grain. These would be mistakes, but selective legalization, which is what's going on in this country, particularly with cannabis, is what people want. Evidence that 44% of adults in the States already are regular users of cannabis. I mean, this is what's happening. This is what the populace want. And we do have to proceed very carefully because there are particular problems succeeding with legal marijuana.
Anne Marie, thank you for your call, and we'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Dr. Lloyd Sederer, who you may know from some of his dozen other books or as mental health editor for the Huffington Post. And his new book is The Addiction Solution, Treating Our Dependence on Opioids and Other Drugs, with opioid dependence and opioid deaths so rampant in the United States in recent years. I guess we were talking during the break, and I guess you come at this as a medical professional in the way that doctors and public health professionals approach a lot of diseases. Prevention first, screening second, early intervention when needed.
Yes, and good comprehensive treatment. Yes, I'm a public health doctor, and we have an epidemic here, and epidemics have been beaten back. Think of polio, think of smallpox, think of how we've beaten back tobacco, HIV, AIDS. That approach means prevention. Prevention means working with kids when they're young, not trying to scare them, but give them skills, decision-making, mood-modulating skills, and then early detection, which is about screening, just like we screen for blood pressure, so that this is detected early before it takes too big a root in a person, and then treatment. And treatment is not reliance on one particular approach, like NA or like medications or psychotherapy. It's all of the above because they are additive.
What about when we talk about prevention, political interventions, social justice interventions? We had a caller who unfortunately hung up. I was going to take him, who says poverty leads to the circumstances, you know, that increase the chances of addiction. Other people say family breakdown. We see, you know, to the extent that the focus these days is on older, white, less educated, more rural opioid users. These are people who, you know, the company towns where the company has disappeared, things like that.
Yes, these are sometimes called deaths by despair. And these are overall called the social determinants of health, which are very prominent in terms of poverty, education, food insecurity, violence. These are prime people for drug use because of their circumstances, because of the lives that they're leading.
Claudia in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Claudia.
Hi, thanks for taking my call and thanks for your great work.
Thank you.
My question is about, I believe there are new guidelines from the Center for Disease Control on opioid use that were generated, beginning of this year. I have a close friend who's got chronic pain, fibromyalgia, multiple chemical sensitivity, severe migraine. She's homebound. She got basically a generic letter from her internal medicine doctor saying he's weaning her off all her pain medications, and that's the end of that. I'd love to hear your comment.
Sometimes the pendulum can swing too far in the other direction. That for years, doctors generally prescribed and even over-prescribed opioids, and now they're under tremendous scrutiny, and many of them are getting frightened and taking patients off opioids who probably don't need to be taken off.
That pendulum, because the implications on either side are so profound, is really important to get right. I don't know if we can get it right. You know, it wasn't that many years ago that I remember having conversations on the show with doctors and public health advocates who were saying we're not treating patients for their pain enough. It's unnecessary for so many patients to be left in so much pain. Now the pendulum has swung the other way.
Yes.
Is there a right place?
There is, but we probably are going to go a little bit overboard before we find the right place again, and I hope that happens.
In the book, I think it's fair to say you're slightly critical of the overuse of 12-step programs like Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, yes?
I'm critical of the singular use of 12-step programs. They're important, they help, but often they're not sufficient. And when we match them with medication treatments, Suboxone, with cognitive therapies that help prevent relapse, people do a lot better and stay alive.
Megan in Mattawan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Megan.
Hi. This is very exciting to be on the air. So I just wanted to speak directly to that because my brother was in many rehab centers over the years, and many of them were abstinence-only programs, and so he was not able to receive Suboxone or even some of his bipolar medication, even coffee. And I was wondering why the rehab industry seems to be lagging behind the research in harm reduction.
Families need to do their homework and to not have one of their loved ones go to a center that is abstinence only, that prohibits the use of psychiatric medications, medications for opioids. They're lost in the past, and that's not where to invest your money or your loved one's future.
Thank you for your call, Megan. You say just 1 in 10 people with substance abuse disorders are accessing necessary treatment that works. What's the biggest obstacle to more people getting it?
Probably stigma. And that stigma works in several ways. It works in terms of how the health profession regards people with addiction. I don't want an addict in my office. And it works also in terms of how people experience themselves. People who have addictions generally loathe themselves, and they're very reluctant to put themselves out to seek care because of the shame involved.
In the book, you even mentioned the possibility of a vaccine.
Yes.
What kind of vaccine?
Well, vaccines have to be very specific to a particular drug. So it is possible to introduce proteins into the body that might make the use of fentanyl or the use of heroin useless. Because just like with the flu, though the flu vaccine hasn't been all that effective.
Kelly, some years it's pretty effective,
yes.
Some years it's not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not to dissuade people from their flu.
Right,
vaccines.
Everybody should get a flu shot.
Kelly in Putnam County, you're on Putnam Valley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Dr. Setterer and Brian. I'm a KSAC student. I'm studying to be on the front line of substance abuse counseling, and I encouraged my class to tune in today because I understood the topic was really going to be about empathy. And I see the threads of empathy in what you're talking about. But I'm also a recovering person myself, a recovering pothead. And I personally get alarmed by our society's myths and push to use cannabis and cannabinoid products or legalization of marijuana to cure this opioid crisis. And I see it as an additional public health problem we would create. So I'm anti-legalization and pro-decriminalization. I'm curious to know if Dr. Setterer has read Kevin Sabbath's book, Reefer Sanity, which outlines a lot of the research on cannabis that's been done outside of the United States.
Thank you very much. Do you know that work? And the other
well,
thing
good
that
for you to be becoming a KSAC. And I am not familiar with that work, and I don't know the caliber of the research, cannabis is a drug we don't know enough about, and there's a march to legalization that the public wants, and we have to use that as an opportunity to learn who it works for and what the problems are.
In our last 30 seconds, is there anything you want to add about empathy? Did I not ask you enough about empathy as it relates to your whole thesis?
I think you did. Empathy, for me, means that we approach this problem starting with the person. Who is this person? Why are they using? How do we meet them where they are? That's what empathy is about.
And so I guess you're tying empathy to the harm reduction approach rather than things that are more sort of ideologically rigid.
Right, and to destigmatization and to effective treatment.
Dr. Lloyd Setterer's new book is The Addiction Solution, Treating Our Dependence on Opioids and Other Drugs. Thank you so much for coming in.
Great to be here. Thank you.